And they shake the world so much it should shake us and change our lives. So I want to have a look at these 3 days, at least 2 days, Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And look at day one. Day one we call Good Friday. And I know, you know, it's said a lot, what's so good about Good Friday? And it's a good question. What is good about Good Friday? Because when you think about what happened, it's a very, very strange name, Good Friday. Because the events that led up to Good Friday and then happened on Good Friday are truly, truly awful. The trouble is we can get used to this stuff again. And we've heard words like crucifixion. But the horror of that event is staggering. And if you read the Bible, you see some awful things that go on just before Good Friday and on Good Friday. Jesus kept up all night before he was crucified. Here's a number of things. Let me whiz through some of the things that happened on Good Friday. We're told that he was betrayed by a close friend. I don't know whether you've ever been betrayed, but it's a horror to be let down by a close friend. He was sold for 30 pieces of silver. So there was a price put on his head and his best mate sold him. It's quite shocking. And he was given up with a kiss. It was all a lovely thing. Oh, lovely to see you. It was a greeting. It was an honour. It was a kiss. And he was sold for 30 pieces of silver, betrayed by a best friend. He was accused by false witnesses. They had to round up. They had to go out in the early mornings of Good Friday and round people up that would tell lies. They couldn't get people. They said someone would say this, someone would say that, someone would say this, and they were all sort of denying each other's testimony. And they had to round up liars going around to bring them in. And so he was accused by false witnesses. That's a shocking thing, isn't it? When you know that something isn't true and someone's saying, you know, you said this, you did that, or your words are manipulated. So he's betrayed by a close friend, accused by false witnesses, found guilty in an illegal trial. So the injustice of it is shocking when you read the trials. We've been through Matthew's Gospel, and if you want to hear about the shock of those trials, then go online and listen to some of those talks. It's outrageous. People pretending to be about justice, but all about injustice. Not only that, though, he was found not guilty in a legal trial and yet was still condemned. So Pilate, who stood for the Roman authorities at the time, found him innocent. And on a number of occasions, clearly this man is innocent of these crimes. But he didn't have the courage. So here was a judge, a leader that didn't have the courage to go along with the verdict of innocence. So they beat him, we're told. And abused him. Now, a Roman whipping, you've got to get the horror of that. It's not just a slap on the back. It's not just a few, you know, just one whip. It's the equivalent of a cat of nine tails. And they would sew into those strips of leather little claws of bone or stone or metal. And so they wouldn't just whip. You've got to get this. They wouldn't whip a Roman whipping. They would whip and then pull. So his back is described as a ploughed up field, as it ploughed through his flesh. It's a horrific event of being beaten and laughed at and abused. A Roman whipping would often kill people. A Roman whipping would often rip off a whole side of a face because it would lash round and pull. It was a horrific event. But not only was he beaten and abused, he was then sentenced to a cruel death. Crucifixion is so, so cruel. It's public and it's cruel, and you're put nails through your hands and through your feet, and you're stuck up on a cross, and you can only breathe by pushing your legs up to get some breath, and down you go. It is a cruel, horrific death. This is called Good Friday. But not only that. He's publicly mocked. People were mocking him. You're a king, aren't you, Jesus? Claim to be a king? Where's your crown then? They put a crown of thorns on his head. And they're not nice little thorns that you see sometimes outside churches, nicely plaited, so they just sort of settle on the head. You know, these are Roman soldiers. We're told in Matthew's gospel that they beat it on his head many times. They're thorns that are very long. It would have driven like nails into his skull. His face would have been a mask of blood. And they mocked him. He's wearing a crown now. "Hail, King of the Jews," they mocked. "You claim to be a king? Well, where are you?" And then hanging on the cross, not only that, they put nails through his hands and through his feet, but hanging on that cross was the whole mocking of, "If you're a king, then come down. You saved others. Why can't you save yourself?" Mocking. Nails through his hands and through his feet, and they let him die. And he died under the Roman execution. So what is good about Good Friday? They left him to die. What's so good about Good Friday? What is good about that? I mean, are we weird? I mean, would we celebrate any other death like that? You know, do we want to go around and say, "Look what happened in Kenya. What a great day that was when 147 students were executed, Christian students were executed under Islam in Kenya this week. Oh, let's celebrate. Let's call it good." I can't remember what day it happened on, Tuesday. It would be a weird thing, wouldn't it? Are we weird? Is there something odd about us? Well, this is why you need to read the scriptures. And you need to find out why it's called Good Friday. Because under the bloody, shocking, horrific event, there is incredibly good news. Why did Jesus die? There are all kinds of ideas about that. People say because he couldn't escape it. People say, to prove his love for us. People say, to set us an example. And others say, to rescue us. There's some of the answers that people would give to Good Friday. Let me just work through them very quickly. Because he couldn't escape. That is just not true. We can cross that one out. He predicted his death. He lived to die. You die, you live and then die. He came to die. He came for that purpose, to die, we're told. He predicted it. He said that the whole Old Testament, the part of the Bible that was written before he came into this world in the flesh, he said that it showed that he was to suffer and die. He came to die. So it's not because he couldn't escape it. In fact, on one occasion in his life, when they wanted to push him over a cliff because they didn't like what he was saying, he just walked through people. There was a whole gang, a whole crowd, a whole town came out, and they were so angry at him, they were wanting to push him over, and it says Jesus walked through them. So he could have easily escaped. He had the power to raise people to life again. He could have easily said, "Don't you touch me." He could have, if he was just a sort of superhero in the wrong sense, zapped people away. You know? It wasn't because he couldn't escape. There were some toys that came out from America. I'm sorry for those who are American here. But it had to come from there, I'm afraid. It was the weirdest thing I've ever read. And they tried to make all of the religious leaders into superheroes. They thought that was a great idea to help kids. And they made Jesus into a superhero. This is absolutely true. You could buy a superhero toy, Jesus. And do you know what the super weapon Jesus had? He could fire nails at people from the cross. I mean, isn't that extraordinary? Isn't that an extraordinary thing? Superhero Jesus. Superhero Muhammad. I mean, my goodness me. You know what? What is going on? Now, of course, Jesus could have done that. He could have ripped the nails off. He could have fired the nails at people. But he chose not to. He could have escaped, but he didn't. It wasn't because he was weak. It was because he was strong. Or to prove his love for us. Well, yes, that's true, but it's still got a cross by it because it doesn't explain the whole story, the big picture. Or to set us an example. Yes, again, in the Bible, Jesus does set an example of love, but it's not the full picture. You don't just die on a cross to set an example. There's got to be some other reason. And the real reason that you see in the Bible is that he died to rescue us. He died to rescue us. He died to rescue us. That is what it's about, and that's why it's called Good Friday. All of the pain, all of the suffering, all of the physical pain that he went through shows us what we, the world, are like when it comes to God. We hate him. We're like the crowd saying, crucify him. We want to get rid of him. We want to destroy him. It shows us what we're really like. I don't want Jesus as Lord in my life, as King of my life, because I want to be King of my life. I don't mind a little superhero that might fire some arrows and or nails at people on my behalf, but I don't want a king, a Lord. And that's what we're like. So Good Friday shows us how bad we are. It's bad Friday when it comes to us, rejecting the Son of the living God. But even then he still loved us and came to rescue us. And it's all about rescue. Why did Jesus die? Well, look at this next slide. He died to redeem, for redemption, to pay it all. To pay the price. Here's a sentence from the Bible. He has died as a ransom to set them free from the sins committed to us. Sins committed by us. So we've committed the sins. That has held us in captivity. That has held us in addiction, slavery. We're addicts to this world, to flesh and time, to just our body. To ourself, to rejecting God. We're like in prison. We're like slaves. We're like addicted. We're like stuck prisoners to self, to the lies of the devil, to the world. And we need setting free. But there's a price to set us free. A ransom price. The ransom has to be paid in order to allow these addicts out. To allow these slaves. Jesus says, if the Son, and he's talking about himself, the Son of God, if the Son sets you free, you shall be free indeed. And he pays the ransom price. And what was Jesus doing on the cross? He was paying the very expensive price to set you free so that you could know God as your Father and you could be forgiven of your sin. That's what he was doing. That is good news. If you're a prisoner and someone comes along and unlocks the door and lets you free, I guess you would call that a good day, wouldn't you? If you're a prisoner to the evil one, to yourself, to this world that's just going to die to death, and someone comes and sets you free, I want to call that a good day. That's a good day. That's Good Friday. That's Good Friday. That's what he was doing on the cross. But he was doing more than that, a lot more, and I've only got time to tell you two things. Look at the next slide. He's come to pay that penalty. The penalty is taken. In other words, he's not only paid the price by his death, his life, to give you freedom, he's actually taken the penalty of your death and my death. He's taken the penalty. That's what he was doing on the cross. He was taking the penalty. In the Old Testament, you had a lamb. And what happened to the lamb? I'll tell you what happened to the lamb. So Dan, just come up here a minute. If I was in the Old Testament part of the Bible, I would bring a lamb. You're a lamb, by the way. Get down like a lamb. I know you love doing this. Yeah, yeah, no, no. He's a lamb. There's the lamb. What's a lamb say? Yeah. Yep. And I bring the lamb to the place where it is going to die in my place. That's what happened in the Old Testament. I know you can't quite see him, but this is what happened. I bring the lamb to the temple, yes, and he is going to die in my place. It had to be a male lamb. Are you male?
Yeah.
Well, hold it. Lambs don't say yeah. Are you a male? And the lamb had to be young. Are you young? And the male had to be perfect. I'll ask his wife. Are you perfect?
Meh.
Unblemished? No broken legs?
Meh.
No. So the lamb came. Now that was going to die in my place to take the penalty that I deserved. That's what it was. Now who killed the lamb? Me. Not the priest. Me. I took a knife. Anybody got a knife? But before I put my whole, this is going to hurt, I put my whole weight, I leant on the lamb. My whole weight goes on this lamb, and that's a weight. My whole weight, because it's representing me, it's taking my weight. I took the weight, it took all of me. I pulled back its head and I slit its throat. And it was dying. What are you doing? It was dying. It's dying. And as I feel the lifeblood go out, I know that should have been me. You can go back now. Give him a little round of applause. Look at this sentence from the Bible. God presented him, that's Jesus, as a sacrifice of atonement through faith in his blood. He paid the penalty. An atonement means at one-ment. I am now at one with God because the penalty has been paid. The sacrifice has happened. It's a marvellous, marvellous thing. Let's have a break. That's the longest section. And we're going to sing a song that will remind us of the death and the resurrection of Jesus. See him in Jerusalem. Let's stand and sing this song together. Now the question is, we see why it's called Good Friday, because he's the rescuer. He pays the price for us. He takes the penalty for us to set us free so that we can know God. The big question though you have to ask is, did it work? It's got to be the big question. You know, does it work? How do we know that God has accepted Jesus' death in our place? I don't know whether you can read that, yes. How do we know that? How do we know that God has accepted Jesus' death in our place? How do I know? How do I know he's paid the price? How do I know that he's really paid the price for me? So that seems to me to be an extraordinarily important question. I understand Good Friday, okay, it sounds like good news. But is it really? How do I know? Well, let me just take you back to the Old Testament. I was talking about the lamb that I laid my weight on. And in the Old Testament, the blood, I slit its throat. And the blood of the lamb was taken into a very special place called the Holy of Holies in the temple or in the tabernacle. That was where God was. There was a great big curtain separating ordinary people off from the place where God was seen to dwell. It was an illustration of where God was living. Yeah? And a priest, once a year, a high priest, would take the blood into the holy place, through the curtain, into the holy place, and bring that sacrifice. But how did they know in the Old Testament whether that blood was acceptable to God? Whether God said, yes, that's worked. I take that. I take the payment. Well, look in the Old Testament. Look at this next slide. This is what happened. There's the priest. He goes into the holy place. And this is what it says in the old part of the Bible. Then Aaron, he's the high priest, is to go into the tent of the meeting. So he's been into the holy place and now he's coming back into the tent of meeting. So Aaron is to go into the tent of meeting and take off the linen garments. Whenever you hear the word linen, wherever you are in the Bible, where there's a man in linen, you should listen. Daniel, those of you who've been studying Daniel, the linen man in Daniel. Well, here's another linen. Take off the linen garments he put on before he entered the holy place, that's where God is, and he is to leave them there. So how do you know if you were an Israelite back in the desert, the blood has been taken into the holy place, how do you know whether it worked? Well, the priest comes out because he goes into the place where if anyone else goes in, you're dead. He sort of goes into the place of death and he comes out alive and he takes his linen clothes off and he wraps them up. And when you see the linen clothes in the place where you can go, when you see the linen clothes, you say, oh, he's alive. It was acceptable. Now, come all the way to the New Testament part of the Bible, to the next slide here. This is in John's Gospel. Jesus had died on a cross. On the Saturday, he'd been put into the tomb. He's there on the Saturday. We're on Resurrection Day now. And look what it says. Taking Jesus' body, the two of them, that's the disciples, wrapped it with spices in strips of linen. You see that? So this is the women, in strips of linen. This was in accordance with the Jewish burial customs. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden, a new tomb, in which no one had ever been laid. And then it goes on. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there. So he's put in the body of Jesus, dressed up in linen clothes. Now a disciple comes to the tomb. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Strips of linen lying there, no body. Go on to the next slide. Then Simon Peter, who was behind him, this is another disciple running up behind him, arrived and went into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been around Jesus' head. The cloth was folded up by itself, separate from the linen. There's the linen. Even some of it is folded up. And he says, yes. Someone like the priest went in with the blood and came out and took his clothes off. It's an amazing thing. It's a wonderful picture so that we can know that Jesus rose from the dead. So the big question, did it happen, is answered, and what happened, is answered in this next verse. He, Jesus, was delivered over to death for our sins, took it into God, God accepted it, and was raised to life for our justification. Do you see that? Did Good Friday work? Yeah. How do we know? Because of Easter Sunday morning. Because of the linen clothes. Your sins are forgiven, not by anything you do, but by the priest, the high priest, Jesus, dying and rising again. Let's sing again. See What a Morning is our next song. And what a gloriously bright morning it is. Let's stand and sing. So it's resurrection morning. We've been on Good Friday and understand a little of why it's called Good Friday. We want to know whether his sacrifice was really accepted for us. And we see the linen outside. We see an empty tomb. But were there witnesses to this? How do we know that that's true? Were there witnesses? Well, there are plenty of witnesses. And there are some in our audience. There's Thomas, for instance.
I'm Thomas. I wasn't going to believe just because the others said so. I wanted hard evidence, even to put my hand in the spear wheel. Of course, when I did meet him, all I could say was, my Lord and my God.
There's Mary.
I'm Mary. I thought they'd stolen his body. Where had they put it? It never crossed my mind that it could be alive. But suddenly, there he was. Instantly, I knew it was him by the way.
There were the 12 apostles, or 11 apostles, at least.
We, the apostles, say that men don't die for something they know is a lie. We are all prepared to die to defend us
Now, they're some of the witnesses, and you can read about them, I mean, historically. So those apostles, and there was another one that replaced Judas, so there was 12, they all died. They all died gruesome deaths rather than say, actually, this was a lie. They had every opportunity to say, okay, it wasn't true. But they died gruesome deaths saying, it is true. There's a lot in that. Mary was there. The very fact that Mary was one of the first witnesses. You see, for us, it makes sense. We listen to the witness of the women that were there first. But this shows that it was true, a true document written at the time, because people didn't really listen to women's testimony. They didn't count for anything in those days. It always had to be men. And yet, the first witnesses of the empty tomb were women. And for us, we say, yeah, okay, I get that. So there's a whole lot of things going on. But at one time, there were 500. And I don't know whether you can quite read all of this. You probably can't, can you? Some of you can. And we'll try and read it together, because there were 500. Or maybe I'll just read it, I don't know. But there were 500 at one time saw the risen Jesus. Shall we have a go? If you can read it. Are you at the back? Can you see? No? Yeah, well, what? Why do the blind people all sit at the back? all people with glasses just sit at the front. Let's have a go. Let's see if we can read it. We're the 500. Here we go. There were about 500 of us together. Suddenly, Jesus came among us. No doubt it was him. Now, can 500 have the same hallucination? If you don't believe me, you can always check with the other 499. That's true. And Paul writes this at a time that people could have checked this out. When I was a younger evangelist, there used to be a thing going around to show people this. I was going to do it here, but I couldn't really think of any volunteers that would do it. Back in those days, we were harder. But you would do something, you'd send five people out. You'd do something before a large congregation like this, something crazy. And then you'd say to the congregation, now be quiet, I'm going to do this in front of you. Then you would bring the people in and say, I did this thing, which I'll tell you in a minute. Do you believe? And they'd say, no. And then you'd get the whole congregation to say, we saw it. And then you say, now do you believe? And if they said no, they were fools. And if they said yes, they were believing the whole congregation. Do you see that? What we used to do was, the way I used to do it, was to get people to eat dog food. So I, on a number of occasions, got a young girl to eat a big pile of dog food, yeah, which stinks. I mean, I was reaching just smelling it. The idea of putting it in the mouth and then you got the young kids in and say, did you think that she ate dog food? No. Then the whole people would say, but we saw it. Will you believe? That's the sort of thing that's going on. The other one that you used to do was you used to do that same thing during assemblies where you got kids in the assembly and you had the headmaster there. I did this up at Southborough Boys' School where there were 500 kids all packed into the room and I'd forgot to ask the headmaster beforehand and you cut his tie off. And so I just cut his tie off and hadn't asked him. And he's going, what the? You know? But he can't swear in front of the kids. And then you get the kids in and say, do you believe I, you know, you hide the headmaster. Do you believe I cut his tie off? No, no. And then the whole audience say yes. And then you're called into the headmaster's room. Which reminded me of my school days. But, you know, so, in other words, this event happened. 500 people. Will you not believe them? Not believe the 12? Not believe Mary? Not believe Thomas? Why should I believe you when you weren't there and not them who were there? So there were witnesses. But let me just take you through the alternatives. This was something, a little diagram that I did many years ago, and I want to take you through. I hope you can see it. Did Jesus rise from the dead? What's the evidence? And you need to do something like this. There are only two alternatives, aren't there? Jesus did not die on the cross. If there was this alive Jesus, There's only two alternatives. He did not die on the cross, and he did die on the cross. And then we can work our way through. Let's work our way through things then. The two alternatives. He did not die on the cross, so the professional executioners, the Roman executioners, professional executioners, used to crucifying many people, got it wrong. They put him in the tomb. Now remember, he'd had nails smashed through his hands. He had been beaten up by a Roman whipping and mocked and had not been really had any drink and had kept up all night through false trials. He was hanging on a cross. Everybody thought he was dead. A Roman centurion rammed a spear up into his diaphragm to see whether he was dead, and if he wasn't, I think that might have killed him. And we're told blood and water had separated. When your blood separates, you're clearly dead. But no, he wasn't dead, even though all of that happened. And so with all of that, they put him in the tomb, and because it was a cool tomb, he woke up. He revived. That's an alternative. That's what some people believe. Let's work our way through. Then he escaped through a Roman guard that was put at the tomb, through a Roman seal, pulling back a great big rock, you know, in that condition, taking off the grave clothes and all the embalming fluid, wrapping them up, and then escaped. And he escaped on his own without help and then said, I am the resurrection and the life. Yeah? Or... So therefore, the conclusion is, he must have just fainted on the cross. That's all that happened. He didn't die, he just fainted on the cross. Or you can go this other route. He escaped with help of the disciples, and then that means that the whole thing was a fraud. The disciples died for a fraud, knowing it was all a fraud. It's all a big lie. The whole New Testament is based on a lie, even though they emphasize telling the truth. Do not lie, tell the truth. That's one way. Or you can go this other route. He did die on the cross. He didn't rise from the dead. His friends stole the body. Or everybody just went to the wrong tomb. That's an alternative. That's what some people believe. Therefore, the whole thing, when they saw him alive, was just a huge hallucination. 500 people hallucinating at the same time, many people over many weeks all hallucinating that Jesus had risen from the dead. That's an alternative. You can believe that if you like. Or he did rise from the dead, and therefore he is who he claims to be, the Lord. There is one other alternative that I heard fairly recently. In fact, I was listening to it as I was riding my bike along the Portsmouth Road in my earphones. And when I heard someone say that they believe this, I absolutely nearly fell off my bike. I honestly, because I couldn't believe any serious person could believe this. But this was a very serious man. He said, Jesus had a twin brother. And I honestly went like that, went out into the road, smashed into the curb, came back again to control my bike, and then got hooted at by the woman that passed me. As if I wasn't already in danger. Why did I need hooting? But I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know whether she thought I was laughing at her, but I couldn't stop laughing. The whole thing was a twin brother act. My goodness me, come on. Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord. He rose from the dead. And I think when you work it through, there's no other alternative that really fits the historical events and the eyewitnesses and all of the proof that goes with it. He rose from the dead. And it's a great thing that we can be people of the risen King. Let's sing our next song together. Okay, so Jesus is alive, and we know that it means that Good Friday is really very Good Friday. We can be rescued. But how do we sort of rub this in? What does it really mean to me right now? Well, there's a number of things that it proves. Because if Jesus died and rose from the dead, then here's some things that it proves. So I've got my people, so go for it.
Power to raise others to life beyond the grave. Everyone who looks to the Son, Jesus, and believes in him shall have eternal life. And I will raise him up at the last day.
He's defeated death. No one else has done that. Every other prophet, every other good person, every person that lives has not defeated death. He defeated death. That is good news, isn't it? Isn't that good news? 2 weeks ago, our dear brother died on Sunday, Doug. Did he die? Did he die? No, he didn't die. He did not die. Christians never die. He fell asleep. He fell asleep at the bottom of the garden. He fell asleep. And he wakes up with the risen King. Isn't that a marvellous thing? Christians don't die. When you go through the New Testament, you see that phrase, falls asleep, is often used of Christians. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And he didn't die because Jesus has defeated death. Is that not good news? Isn't that a better news than a chocolate egg that's empty and nothing in it? At least when I was younger, you'd break it open, there'd be something in it. They bothered to put something in it. Now it's empty. Like the empty tomb, I suppose. Maybe that's what it's meant to say. He's not here, he is risen. Your crunchy is gone, it's risen. That's a good one to tell your brother. Yes. He's defeated death. But hold it, it's proof of something else. Someone?
He claimed to be more than a prophet. He said he was the Son of God, the Messiah, the truth, the source of life eternal. God the Father brought Jesus back to life to vindicate, to prove all that Jesus said and did. He was declared with power to be the Son of God by his resurrection from the dead.
Jesus is alive. What's it mean? He's defeated death. The very thing that's going to get everyone. There is one person in history that's kicked a hole into death. The shape of the resurrection of Jesus. He defeated death. He is who he claims to be. He has to be. He claims to be Lord. He claims to be the Son of God. He claims to be the truth. He's right. He's right on all of those things. But there's one last proof.
Jesus is alive. He will return to judge the earth. God has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to all men. By raising him from the dead.
He's given proof that Jesus will come again and he is the judge. It's what the whole world is about. He's died to rescue us, to bring us into the family of God. He's risen again. His sacrifice was accepted. He's setting up a new kingdom. Are you part of that? Are you part of that kingdom? Or are you still sort of wrapped up down here? Just in this little world of death. Do you know, if you died 2 weeks ago at the bottom of your garden, could it be said, no, he or she hasn't died, they've just fallen asleep. Because they're in Jesus. He's defeated death. He is who he claims to be. He will come again and judge. And everything depends on whether on Good Friday he took your judgment or not. There's the proof. And what does it mean? It means this last set of things to us. No longer, as Christians, do we need to be afraid of death. It's just falling asleep. You practice every night, I guess. I guess you practice every night. You put your head on the pillow and fall asleep and wake up to a new day, don't you? It's practicing your death, you know? And tell that to your kid. Now go to sleep and practice your death. I used to say to Carl that sort of thing. Now close your eyes, and of course when you close your eyes, all your toys come alive with big teeth. So close your eyes right now, go to sleep. I can't go to sleep. Why not? Anyway, let's move on. How not to do parenting. No longer afraid of death. You don't need to be afraid of death. Death isn't king. Jesus is king. You're no longer living for self. Why would you live for yourself? You die to self. Live for the risen King and his kingdom. And you're no longer alone. You're not lost in a lonely universe on your own. Jesus is your king and he's risen and he's alive. He's not an imaginary friend. He's a real one. And he brings us to the Father so that we can pray, Our Father. He brings us into the family. These are the great truths. Christ is risen. Very slow. Christ is risen. Christ is risen. Isn't that good news?
Yes.
Then let's give thanks to the living God that he is the King of the universe. Let's sing our last song together. He is Lord, the cry that echoes through creation. Let's stand and sing together.